Way up north,
north to Alaska.
Way up north,
north to Alaska.
North to Alaska, to go north for us is home.
Historical pop songs must mean that Felix Spinell has entered the building. How far back are we going this morning?
I think we're going to about 1867, by my estimation. So, you know, Amazon's announcement of their search for HQ2 and all the cities now jockeying for it got me thinking about a time not too long ago when Seattle was HQ1 for Alaska. I started wondering about how that happened. And, you know, Bill Spiedel, the underground Seattle fame, you know, late author of Sons of the Prophets at Irreverent History, he said that Seattle for a while was the only city in the U.S. with its own private territory. You know, our economy is so diversified now, it's easy to forget that Alaska was once a source, a much greater proportion of economic activity here. You know, back in 19th century, fur and fisheries, the Klondike Gold Rush, you know, steamship business, building the Alaska pipeline. Now it's, you know, cruise ships and air travel, of course. Even the Chamber of Commerce in a recent report said that's still responsible for about 113,000 jobs and $6.2 billion in activity. So, but none of this ever would have happened without Secretary of State William Seward. Explains why there's a big statue of him at Volunteer Park. There's a school a few blocks from here named after him. And, of course, a big park on Lake Washington. He's all over the place. You trip over Seward anytime you turn around here in Seattle.
That's true.
So to understand that connection, you have to go back to the 1860s. The Civil War was over. The federal government had time to look into other opportunities and other issues. In January of 1866, our territorial legislature petitioned President Andrew Johnson for help getting better fishing rights in Russian America, which is what Alaska was called in those days. So William Seward, the Secretary of State, started negotiating with Russia, but he wanted more than fishing rights. He wanted the whole enchilada or the whole pierogi.
Why?
I
mean, it was called Seward's Folly because nobody could figure out what you'd do with it.
Well, Seward had big plans for all of North America, and he became intent on buying Russian America from the Russians. He's a fascinating guy. You know, he was attacked the same night Lincoln was assassinated.
Right.
He was stabbed multiple times. He gets credit for keeping Great Britain and France out of the Civil War on the side of the Confederacy. He accomplished a lot. So I learned all this from Walter Starr. He's an author, a biographer of Seward. He wrote a book a few years ago. I asked him why the Russians were even willing to consider selling us the land. Starr says they'd seen how the U.S. had expanded across the West, in particular how the annexation of Texas had gone down.
Russia was well aware that fishermen were already coming up from Washington territory and fishing in Russian waters. They didn't like it, but it was a million miles away. There wasn't much they could do about it. And so they feared a similar process of gradual Americanization and annexation. And they thought, you know, it's better to get something for it than to just see it seized by these upstart Americans.
And that is what happened with Texas. Americans just started moving into Mexican territory.
Yeah, and declared their own republic for a while. Then it was annexed, in 1845, I think. Anyway, Seward's Russian counterpart was a diplomat named Eduardo Stockel. They began talking about Alaska in March of 67. As legend has it, negotiations moved very quickly late one night when Stockel got word from Russia he could go ahead and sell. They bumped into each other at a men's club, and Stockel said, "Let's meet tomorrow and make a deal." Walter Starr said Seward didn't want to wait.
Seward, with a smile, pushed back from the table and said, "Let us do the treaty tonight." And Stockel said something like, "Well, it's 10 in the evening, your office is closed." And Seward said, "Never mind, if you show up at midnight at the State Department, you will find me and the clerks. We will do it tonight." And they did. They basically started work. I mean, there were a few little points to clear up. They started work at midnight and signed the thing at about 5 in the morning.
Yeah, so if you've seen that statue, it says at the base, "Let us make the treaty tonight," and that apparently is what he said. That comes from his son's biography a few decades later, so it's not positive. But for $7.2 million, that's 2 cents an acre, we got all of Alaska. It was official by October of that year. But according to Walter Starr, that wasn't all that Seward had his eye on.
Seward thought that he might be able to persuade the British to part with British Columbia. But just in terms of your part of the world, he saw no border just north of Seattle. He saw just American territory running up the entire coast between Seattle and Alaska.
Oh, we'd have been bigger than Texas.
Yeah, and there was some dissatisfaction there in BC, but of course Canada confederated later that year and convinced them to join Canada. So Seward did visit here in 1869. The town was so small, Seward later said he thought he shook hands with every single resident of Seattle on his visit. And we didn't become HQ1 of Alaska automatically. There's a much deeper story about sort of machinations we took in the 1890s. But we beat out San Francisco. We especially beat out Tacoma and became HQ1 for Alaska.
How about that? There is a Seward statue, right?
Yeah, it was for the AYP. It was unveiled 108 years ago this week over on the UW campus. It was moved up to Volunteer Park. It was supposed to be moved down to Seward Park eventually, but for some reason that didn't happen.
Well, it's in Volunteer Park.
It's in Volunteer Park. It's huge right there by the conservatory.